Good morning, all. Judge Easterbrook and I are pleased and privileged to have sitting with us this morning the Chief Judge of the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Chief Judge Griesbach, and we thank him for his service in the past and, of course, his service today. Our first case for argument this morning is Acosta versus Target Corporation. Mr. Piel.
Good morning. May it please the Court. We are here because rather than follow the law, Target chose to send its offer of a Target Visa card with the actual Target Visa enclosed and with incomplete and intentionally misleading disclosures to their customers, disclosures which they expected the customers to see. Target chose to violate TILA and the Target Guest Card Agreement in order to increase the profitability of its credit card portfolio. While the district court agreed with the appellants on most of the facts, the district court's order contains numerous legal and logical errors that, left undisturbed, will not only undermine TILA, but will also negatively impact every credit card account holder's contractual rights. Further, there were disputed material facts that prevented the entry of summary judgment in Target's favor. Target admits that the purpose of its challenge programs was not the continuation of a well-established mutually satisfactory relationship, which is the sole purpose of the substitution exception to Section 1642.
Where is that language in Section 1642?
Your Honor, Section 1642 is bare bones. You have to go to the legislative history.
No. You go to the legislative history to disambiguate ambiguous terms in a statute. What is the ambiguous term in the statute that needs disambiguation?
Substitution, Your Honor.
That seems to me a perfectly straightforward term.
Your Honor,
substitute one thing for another. That's what substitution means.
Your Honor, I agree. Under normal circumstances, that's what it means. But the Federal Reserve Board official staff comments seem to disagree with Your Honor based upon the fact that they
what
have elaborated
language in Regulation Z is being interpreted by the language you've just quoted. You
Sorry.
See, where there has to be, before the staff commentary comes in, mm-hmm. if you think about what the Supreme Court said in Ford against Mulholland, you need some ambiguity in the regulation. What your brief does, what you've just done here, is just leap without telling us what the ambiguity is, what the text is, what the ambiguity in the text is. You've just leapt straight to legislative history and commentary. And if there's anything clear in the Supreme Court's decisions of the last 20 years, it's that that move is impermissible. That's why I want you to start with the text of the statute and the text of Regulation Z.
Well, the text of the statute and the text of Regulation Z are pretty much the same, and it says...
Exactly. And there doesn't appear to be any ambiguity in the text, so there's no hook for your legislative history.
Your Honor, the Federal Reserve Board disagrees, and the Supreme Court also said in Mulholland...
The Federal Reserve Board has not disagreed. Staff commentary is not a decision of the Federal Reserve Board. Regulation Z is promulgated by the board. And the Supreme Court, as I say, the Supreme Court is perfectly clear. You cannot turn to history or commentary without identifying an ambiguity and explaining how this commentary is resolving the ambiguity. And you have made, as far as I can see, no effort to identify the ambiguity or explain how this commentary is disambiguating it.
Okay. Well, the ambiguity, Your Honor, is that the purpose behind Section 1642...
We start with the text. We
okay.
do not start with purposes imputed to people who adopted the text.
Well, it says, regardless of the purpose for which a credit card is to be issued, including, Section 1642 says you're only allowed to send an unsolicited credit card in response to an application or solicitation. And the exception that it creates is renewal or substitution.
mm-hmm.
Apparently, the ambiguity, Your Honor, is that what took place in this case is not a substitution, because for the vast majority of accounts, the Target Visa is never accepted. and the target guest...
What does that have to do with substitution?
Well, Your Honor, if it's one for another...
If one is replaced by another, that's substitution as one ordinarily understands substitution. What is the ambiguity in the word substitution on which we need the help of legislative history, say?
Your Honor, Congress delegated to the Federal Reserve Board.
Right, and the Federal Reserve Board in Regulation Z just reenacts the same language.
Okay.
Right? The Federal Reserve doesn't do anything.
Okay.
So my question stands, what's the ambiguity? And it's the same word in the statute and in Regulation Z. If there were an ambiguity, we would look to Regulation Z, presumably to disambiguate it. But Regulation Z doesn't do so. It uses the same word. Doesn't define substitution. It limits what can be claimed as a substitution. There is this list of five things that it has to meet. One of them, for example, is that the substituted card has to include the merchants on the original card. And I take it that it's agreed here that the merchant on the original card was Target, and the merchant on the replacement card included Target.
Correct.
Okay, so we got this list of criteria. Are you arguing that the list is otherwise?
No.
This substitution failed to satisfy that list?
Well, yes, Your Honor, because as long as we have gotten to the official staff comments, which is the list you're referring to, the official staff comments provide a list of five examples, which are all supposed to be an example of where the underlying account relationship has changed in some way, such as when the card issuer has changed its name. In this, Target wants to look at the third and the fifth example, but they don't want to look at all five. And when you look at all five, one thing that...
I'm just totally lost. There is nothing in Regulation C or the statute that says that all five of these examples must be satisfied.
Even
the staff commentary seems to say that satisfying any one of them is enough.
No, satisfying any one of them is, but I believe you have to look at them in context and not look at them one at a time. And all I'm saying, Your Honor, is if you look at what these examples are supposed to be illustrating, they're supposed to be illustrating, it defines, substitution encompasses the replacement of one card with another because the underlying account relationship has changed in some way. And the district court actually agreed with the appellants that that did not take place in this case, or originally agreed with the appellants that that did not take place in this case because the unsolicited Target Visa was an offer to change the relationship.
That's certainly not what it said. It said, cut up and throw away your old card, it's canceled.
Correct, Your Honor. However...
And that's what happened for your two clients. Let me tell you, much of your brief discusses the kind of claim that might be brought by somebody who either was able to keep the old card together with the new one, or to get rid of the new card and go back to the old one. But neither of your two clients is in that situation, and you can't represent the rights of others.
Your Honor, I would suggest that the district court erred in stating that, and it's a logical error as well as a legal error. The district court said it was an offer when it was sent, and that's impermissible. But because your clients accepted the offer, well, then it's not actionable. That's tantamount to a waiver or a release of their claim under TILA to be free of that unsolicited card in the first place. Now, both of my clients also testified that if they had been given the option of keeping their Target guest card, they would have. But they read and they relied, and the law says that they don't have to call up Target and say, are you serious? Do I really have to take this card in order to keep my relationship with Target? And then if we turn to count two, which is brought under section 1637C, as explained by 12 CFR 2265A, it's very simple. The Target Visa was a solicitation to open an account. And looking at the separate appendix, pages 18 through the end, there's just no way you can look at that and say that's not a solicitation. In fact, Target admits that this was unlike any change in terms Target had ever participated in up until 2008, and the challenged program went from 2000 through 2007. Now, if I might turn briefly to count three, which is the fraud claim. The fraud here is first that you had to take the unsolicited target visa or lose your account. As I previously mentioned, the law in this circuit is that you don't have to call up and verify representations that are being made to you for their truthfulness. The second factor is it is undisputed that Target sent unsolicited credit cards with a $1,000 minimum credit limit. So even if the recipient did not qualify for a $1,000 credit limit, it was bumped up. And what Target did, and what Target has never been able to explain a legitimate reason for doing, is they withheld all these accounts from the underwriting criteria that was going to apply to these accounts 6 months after the offer was made and was in existence at the time the offer was made. The only explanation I can come up with for why Target withheld these accounts for 6 months from the credit limit assignment formula in existence at the time the offer was made was to make it less obvious that a bait and switch had occurred. And then if I could go to count four real quick, which deals with the breach of contract. The district court erred in finding, and this is what's really disconcerting because it goes beyond this case. The district court found that based upon the language, we have the right to change the terms of this agreement and apply those terms to this to the existing balance, that Target had the right to send an unsolicited credit card to Target guest card holders as an offer to change the relationship. A basic principle of contract law is you only have an agreement when both sides have a meeting of the minds. I don't think any reasonable person could take a look at that language and come to the conclusion that they are, one, consenting to the receipt of an unsolicited credit card at their credit card issuer's whim, two, that they are agreeing to have their credit card issuer move them from one agreement that the credit card issuer has to another agreement. Something that's undisputed is that there were two separate agreements and that neither of those agreements were changing. Target was merely transferring credit card or attempting to transfer customers from one agreement to the next. And then another error that the district court made with respect to breach of contract is that the district court had found that the Target has a very unique provision in their agreement, which says, under our rights, we are limited to limiting or canceling this account. What Target did, and Target admits they call it an upgrade, Target didn't limit or cancel the account. They expanded it. In fact, they have to make that argument to qualify under the fifth example to the official staff comments. But if I could circle back real quick with respect to principles that are applicable to all TILA claims in which this court has to follow when construing TILA. TILA is to be construed liberally in favor of the consumer. TILA is a statute that is supposed to be interpreted from the consumer's perspective. Interpretation of TILA and Regulation Z demands examination of their express language. But absent a clear expression, it becomes necessary to consider the implicit character of the statutory scheme. And that's Ford Motor Co. versus Mulholland. And I think it gets back to your point earlier, Judge Easterbrook. And then with respect to what appears to be the district court's theory as to why the plaintiffs don't have a claim under count one, Target does not dispute that a general release is insufficient to waive rights under TILA. And for that, I'm relying on the Parker versus DeKalb Chrysler Plymouth case cited in our brief. And if I might just go back to count one, it was an offer to change the relationship. There's no disputing that. If you look at our separate appendix and you look at the head of the testimony of the head of underwriting and someone who was chiefly responsible for the auto substitution program at Target, he states, this is separate appendix page 17, 55, 18 through 56, 23, in those pages, he pretty much states that this was an offer. And I see I've gone into my rebuttal time. I sit down unless the court has questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Beal. Mr. Melendez?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Brian Melendez of Dyke & McGossett on behalf of the defendants. Your Honor, as Mr. Peel just explained, the plaintiff appellant's claims here fall largely into two categories. The first is a category of alleged statutory violations of the Truth in Lending Act, and the second is a claim that Target fraudulently misled the plaintiffs about their accounts being upgraded to a Visa card. I'll start off with the statutory claims. The Truth in Lending Act claims turn largely on the meaning of substitution, about which Target obviously agrees with Judge Easterbrook. There is no ambiguity. The applicable statute, Title 15 U.S. Code, Section 1642, prohibits the sending of an unsolicited credit card, but it also contains an exception in the statute saying that this prohibition does not apply to the issuance of a credit card in replacement of or in substitution for an accepted credit card. Target's auto substitution program upgrades a charge card from a store-branded Target guest card that is accepted only at Target stores to a Visa card with additional features that other merchants will honor as well. This practice is long-standing in the credit card industry. Target is far from the only merchant that has upgraded credit cards in this way. Each plaintiff's Target guest card was an accepted credit card within the meaning of Section 1642. The Visa upgrade resulted in changed features and a different merchant base, both of which are examples of substitution that the official staff commentary explicitly approves. The staff commentary says an example of substitution is if you have changed the credit or other features available on the account, or if you have changed the merchant base. And both of those things happened here. So under two of the five examples in the official staff commentary to Regulation Z, the upgrade to a Visa was a substitution. Furthermore, the cardholder agreement itself says that Target can, quote, change this agreement and apply those changes to the existing balance, unquote. Target frequently has changed the agreement. In both the case of Mr. Acosta's account and Ms. Roman's account, Target occasionally changed the credit limit or changed other terms in the account and sent out a notice. Well, when it upgraded them to Visas, it also sent them a notice and more terms than usual change, but it modified the agreement so that the card was now an upgraded Visa card. Target substituted the Target Visa card for the guest card in exercise of its contractual right and consistent with Section 1642 and Regulation Z and the official staff commentary. Now, even though the official staff commentary explicitly approves changed features and changed merchant base as examples of substitution, the plaintiffs are focusing on some introductory language that allows substitution because the underlying account relationship has changed in some way, and they want you to believe that this is just an offer to change. But as soon as auto substitution occurs and the Visa card is presented to the cardholder, two significant changes have already occurred. First, the Visa card changes the features available on the account, and available on the account is the language in the official staff commentary. For example, the Visa card, unlike the guest card, allows transactions and cash advances, for example, at ATMs. Second, while the guest card is honored only at Target stores, the cardholder now has the right to use the Target credit card, in this case the upgraded Visa card, at any merchant that accepts Visa cards, not just Target. So whether or not the cardholder activates the Visa card, the additional features and the expanded merchant base are now available to the account, and the underlying account relationship has changed. It's not merely an offer. The two other courts that have considered this issue reached the same conclusion as the district court here. The Spengler Court in Maryland affirmed a judgment for Sears, which had upgraded Mr. Spengler's credit card from a Sears card to a Sears Gold MasterCard. The Spengler Court held that an upgrade from a store-branded card to a general-purpose card does not establish a new contract or a new account. It's just an upgrade. And, of course, the Murrow Court, and the Murrow case was brought by Mr. Acosta's sister and eventually ended up before this court, which affirmed the district court on other grounds. The Murrow Court held that Target's upgrade of Ms. Murrow's account was a valid substitution under the Truth in Lending Act, the same result that the district court here reached. Turning now to the fraud claim. The fraud claim requires the plaintiffs to point to some statement by Target that was either inaccurate in and of itself or was incomplete in such a way that it was misleading. But the only statements that Target made to Mr. Acosta or Ms. Roman in connection with their Visa upgrades were the statements on the card carrier and in the trifold brochure that contained the credit card terms, a summary and the actual credit card agreement. The card carrier appears in the supplemental appendix starting at page 18. Now, the plaintiffs never read and never heard any other statement besides the statements on the card carrier and the statements in the trifold brochure. Every such statement was accurate. No such statement was misleadingly incomplete, so there can be no fraud. And finally, Your Honors, I've already touched on the breach of contract claim. Target had the right under its agreement to change this agreement and apply the changes to the existing balance. Target did so here in exercise of its rights. So the appellees respectfully ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment. If the court has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Melendez. Mr. Piel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sorry. Okay, I would like to first deal with the statement that counsel just made. He said that the change doesn't take place, or that as soon as the Visa card is issued, additional merchants are available and features have changed on the account. I'm looking at the trifold that was sent along with the Target Visa. You can find it in the record at 214-5, page 4. And I'm looking at the very first paragraph, and it says, if you do not accept the terms of the Visa card, do not activate the card. Your Target guest card will be closed to further use, and you must pay off any outstanding balance on your Target guest card under the current terms of that card. Quite simply, the terms of the account don't change until the offer is accepted. And the vast majority of people who received an unsolicited Target Visa card never activated, and the terms of their account never changed. Now, I go back to the official staff comments. Target wants to talk about examples 3 and 5. I'm sorry, I have to back up because you can't use an example to just completely ignore what it's supposed to be an example of. And in this case, the comment states, substitution encompasses the replacement of one card with another because the underlying account relationship has changed. It's a cause and effect scenario. Target is sending the card in the hope that the relationship will change. The problem we have here, and what Target was looking to do in the future if this program had continued, was send card after card after card until you accept it. And the problem here is this deal, you know, it's not just a problem for people who happen to do business with a card issuer that has multiple cards. Conceivably, a card issuer could say that this account isn't, you know, being all that productive for us. We'd like to make a conditional sale to another issuer. We send that other issuer's card and their terms, and we say, well, if you want to accept their card, on an unsolicited basis. If you don't want to accept their card, that's fine. You can continue on with ours. If you accept their card, great. Your account is now with them. Target's argument doesn't put a limiting principle on Section 1642. And the whole purpose behind Section 1642, and both district courts to deal with this issue have said that card issuers cannot send credit cards at their whim. And that the purpose of Section 1642 is to prevent consumers from being inundated with credit cards. Target doesn't provide a limiting principle. I think it's interesting, if we could turn to example 3 in the official staff comments, that they chose the introduction of automatic teller machines. They didn't choose any change to the account. They chose a change to a feature that already existed on the account that was beneficial to the consumer, and that required the sending of an unsolicited credit card, because prior to that, credit cards didn't have a magnetic stripe on the back. Similarly, if we turn to example 5, the addition of a merchant. Let's take, for example, not proprietary cards, because this comment wasn't directed specifically at store-only merchant cards, but it was directed at all cards. And meet MasterCard, Visa, Discover, American Express, they're adding a merchant every day. So under Target's reading of Example 5, there is no limit as to how many credit cards a network card issuer like Visa, MasterCard, or Discover could send you. And that it's an absurd reading of the commentary, and it's well established that the court will not read the plain language of a statute to come to an absurd result, which is clearly what would result in this case if this court followed Target's suggestion. The practical consequences of affirming the court below go far beyond this case. Credit card issuers will be able to send an unlimited number of unsolicited credit cards as offers to change their relationship with existing cardholders. And for a glimpse of what Target had planned, this court should review document 215-4, pages 1 through 3. Not only is this a bad for consumers because of the inconvenience of an unwanted credit card, but because of potential theft, and because it harms competition, and because Congress recognized that the acceptance rate is much higher and the willingness to shop around is much lower if the credit card is included with the offer. I see my time's expired. Could I have 30 seconds?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court would also be affirming a decision which holds that it is not fraudulent to misrepresent the credit limit being offered. And I respectfully submit that when you state a credit limit, you're making a representation that that credit limit was calculated based off of the formula actually in use at the time, and that it is not a teaser credit limit. While it is unnecessary for this court to go beyond statutory language and official staff comments, if this court finds that it must, this court should continue its practice of looking at the purpose of TILA and reverse the district court. And I would simply direct this court to its opinion in Prigon versus Gates Credit Union, which
talks about
Anderson Brothers. Thank you.
Thanks to all counsel. Case is taken under advisement.